Welcome to the Maris Review. I'm so happy to be sitting here with Anna Merlin, author of Republic of Lies, American Conspiracy Theorists and Their Surprising Rise to Power. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Do you want to talk in broad terms about what you discovered when writing your book?
Sure. My book is about conspiracy theorists in America, and I discovered that they are here and that we are all conspiracy theorists to some extent, which is not a thesis that people like. And I found that people want to argue with me about it a lot because nobody thinks of themselves as a conspiracy theorist because, of course, we all believe that our own views are very reasonable and everybody else's views are crazy. So some of the book is about that, and some of the book is about just the various nasty things that the U.S. government has gotten up to over the years that have created a sense among a lot of people that anything is possible and that any number of things are being hidden from our view.
Absolutely. And that there are just so many atrocities that you go into.
There's a lot.
MK Ultra alone.
Yeah. There's a lot of things that are specific to the U.S. government in the 60s and 70s, either the CIA, the FBI, or just the Department of Defense that are so ridiculous that you sort of can't believe that they're real. One specific one that I talk about is a project that was called Operation Midnight Climax, which is essentially military testing of LSD by giving it to sex workers and having them unwittingly dose their clients just to kind of see what happened. This happened in San Francisco. Like, a lot of these tests did, for whatever reason, the government just, felt free.
That's where the drugs were.
But it was such bad science. Like, on top of everything else, it was sex workers would dose their clients and then the clients would just kind of leave. Like, there was no follow-up so they could see what was happening.
They wouldn't even know if...
If they went crazy long term, or if something else happened to them, or like there was literally no sort of just like all the atrocities of it from a human rights perspective aside, just the sort of
and the name of it, as you say in the book, like Operation Climax. You think anybody's having fun?
It's pretty weird. It's weird stuff. So the book is sort of about the various historical elements that contributed to the climate that we're in today, which is that everybody on sort of every side is using conspiracy theories in different ways.
I mean, the title of the last chapter of your book is called Conspiracism is for Everyone, the Deep State and Russiagate. And when you put it like that, and when I read the book, overall, I began to see how besieged we were and are in all of these theories. And of course, I believe, and anybody listening will know what kind of politics we share, but the Russians influenced the election. What do you think?
Well, they did. I mean, they did try to influence the election, right? I mean, there's a couple of things here. First of all, conspiracy theories are kind of an extension of normal politics. They're sort of a heightened version of normal politics, and we are in a very heightened place already. But also, like, the Russian government did try to influence the U.S. elections, but the thing that so many of us ran into on the left was the idea that, of course, Donald Trump not just knew about it to some degree, but was, a Manchurian candidate, was, was a Russian government employee. And so, it was interesting to write that chapter because obviously I wrote it before the Mueller report came out. So I really had to be like, okay, what do we actually know? And what are my own assumptions and conspiracy theories?
And then, of course, Mueller went on television and made a dramatic 8-minute statement. And it's like, I was imagining in terms of your book, it seems like that's the kind of speech that would drive someone crazy.
Right.
Because he kind of doesn't confirm nor deny, but doesn't deny.
And he's never going to.
Like, and he's never going to.
Like, narratively, that is all we get.
Get a big anticlimax.
Yeah, a lot of people read it to be that he was encouraging Congress to consider impeachment, and maybe he was, but it's also like we are never going to have anything more sort of satisfying than that from an actual, like, as I say, narrative point of view.
Absolutely. And so why wouldn't we all give it our own meanings and try to take from it what we want to see.
And it's going to be really good for the people who have, you know, started making a living on Russiagate conspiracy theorizing because his lack of conclusiveness is allowing them to continue claiming what they've been claiming all along, which is that there are secret indictments or secret plots that are yet to come into view. You know, that they know about, you know, people like Louise Mensch are still saying, you know, there's a lot more going on behind closed doors and you'll know about it soon. And, you know, the Mueller team is coming for them all, which is was very like inviting for people. I mean, it came to resemble a version of QAnon on the left more and more, where there was this idea that your hero of choice was going to sweep out of his office and arrest all the evildoers, and there was going to be this very satisfying climax, and that's not going to happen. That's not going to happen for anybody ever.
And so the other part of the last chapter in your book is called The Deep State, and then the epilogue has QAnon, because you were just starting to get into it.
Right.
And I imagine it's propelled and changed a lot since then, even.
Yeah, totally. Well, so the idea of the deep state broadly is this idea that a lot of Trump supporters have, which is that there are, you know, these elements within the government, these secret, hidden, covert elements that are working for his destruction, and that so many things that Trump is not getting done can be attributed to the deep state.
Right.
And then QAnon started out as this idea that there was a high-level Trump operative, somebody in the Trump administration who was starting to drop clues, what were called crumbs, about
this.
On
Reddit, yes.
On Reddit, as you would.
As you would. Or where else would you?
I actually think it started on 4chan.
Oh, even better.
Yeah, as you would. And so, but this idea that, you know, that this person calling themselves Q was intimating that at any moment there was going to be you know, mass arrest of Trump's enemies, and that the Mueller investigation was really an investigation into his enemies, and that maybe Hillary Clinton was really going to be locked up. The interesting thing about QAnon is that it has grown to sort of be a conspiracy theory about everything. People are trying to make it into a sort of grand unified theory. There's this guy who has something that I believe is called the Deep State Mapping Project, who's like a QAnon supporter who sort of has been making this ongoing crazy diagram of all the connections that he claims are at work.
Oh, wow. So I can imagine it's just like a huge wall and he has like a bunch of photos. And
so the weird thing is that I just saw him at an anti-vaccine conference.
Interesting. So these are related in some way.
They're not really, but the anti-vaccine conference I just attended had a QAnon panel. And so it's sort of this thing that I keep seeing where these different kind of conspiracy communities that they wouldn't call themselves that are kind of like fusing in weird ways that make me feel and sound insane when I talk about them. But yeah, it's been really, really interesting to watch that happen. It's something that the internet really does. It allows all these people to find each other.
And you talk a lot in the book about what role, if any, social media plays in the spread of conspiracy theories.
Right. I think it's sort of inarguable that conspiracy theories play a role, which is something that not every like researcher who's smarter than me agrees with. But I don't think that there is any denying just anecdotally how social media rewards the spread of conspiracy theories.
And certainly you mentioned that, you know, women were being burned at the stake in Salem centuries ago. So this conspiracy theories aren't new.
Right.
It's just that there are new tools.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the thing that social media obviously does is it obviously flattens every source of information. Everything looks the same. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't count how many times I've seen a smart person sharing something that is fake on Facebook, because a link looks like a link looks like a link. Right. It also allows more people exposure to conspiracy theories, and it allows them to spread more easily and in different ways. It makes celebrities of people who would have had a much harder time becoming celebrities before.
Yes.
It also, at its core, like, it rewards participation and engagement. This has been talked about so much, but the things that get shared a lot on places like Facebook and YouTube and Twitter are things that drive engagement, whether it's positive or negative. So making outrageous or inflammatory claims, or emotionally appealing claims of any kind works, and we see how well it works.
And not only does it work in spreading the message, but so much of your book is talking about the hucksterism behind it and how so many people monetize these conspiracy theories. I'm thinking about, most of all, Alex Jones.
Yeah, he's been the most successful. He's not the only one, but he is a really good model for it because he is someone who sort of naturally started selling products that tied in with what he was talking about. Alex Jones has always had really close ties with, you know, far right groups, militias, 9/11 truthers. And so he started around, I think like 2006, it could be, might be a little earlier, selling products like water filtration system, survivalist gear. And that transitioned pretty naturally into him selling supplements. And today we know that the main way that he makes money is off of this incredibly large, profitable supplement business. And so other folks have not been quite as successful in selling stuff the same way he has been, but he's certainly created the sort of like model for it, which is it's not enough to just sell your crazy theories. You also have to have, you know, a product for sale.
You have to make money.
Right. Like Goop with her like jade vagina eggs.
Gwyneth Paltrow also.
Yeah.
A bit of a huckster.
Somebody who is making a lot of claims that I also see echoed in like, you know, other much sketchier health movements.
Right.
You know? So she's part of a spectrum. Yeah.
Absolutely. And so, and yeah, she sells some of the same supplements that Alex Jones shares.
Yeah, she does. There was a really amazing Quartz story that was just showing that a lot of what they sell is the same. I also can pretty regularly, you know, look up some obviously dubious person making dubious health claims and find that they've either been interviewed on Goop, that their book has been reviewed, that one of their products is being sold. You know, that this includes like a guy who claims to essentially diagnose medical issues through psychic powers.
Oh,
like,
boy.
I don't know how else to say it. So she definitely has a role to play here.
And certainly in the chapter about anti-vaxxers, you talk about how, of course, it's smart of us to not trust the medical establishment completely.
Right.
But that then you get people who are susceptible to that idea are also susceptible to quacks on TV, TV doctors like Dr. Phil and Dr. Oz and people who Oprah introduced into this world. I cannot help forget, like, I cannot, she did many wonderful things, and she unleashed a bunch of hell on us, too.
Yeah, she also was somebody who promoted satanic panic ideas when that was a thing. Like, she was somebody who has really, had kind of a bewildering effect on society because of the sheer number of claims she allowed to be loosed upon the world. But yeah, I mean, you know, I'm thinking about this because I just got back from this anti-vaccine conference.
Yes.
But people there, you know, said to me repeatedly, people always say this to me, like, how can you possibly trust the CDC and the FDA? Don't you know, the history of medical establishments in this country? And I say, yeah, I do. But, you know, the great thing is that you don't have to just trust them when it comes to things like vaccine safety. You can trust any number of world health bodies, governments around the world, researchers, other science agencies. Like, it's actually not just up to you to trust one source of information, but it's still like it's very hard to convince people that the government has their best interest at heart.
I mean, if there's one conspiracy theory that I absolutely do believe, it's that I am a type 1 diabetic and there are a couple of medical companies making enough money from charging high prices for insulin that I am sure that there is a cure that is being hidden somewhere, like in a little locked room. And that's where my brain goes.
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely see that. And that is also something that people often say about other chronic conditions like cancer. The idea, well, you know, chronic or, you know, extremely serious conditions.
Right.
Because the idea obviously is that, yeah, like there isn't money in a cure. I definitely understand why people feel that way. And with insulin specifically, it's really hard for me not to agree with you. It's like, why would they want to cure that one?
I think that's what I love the most about your book is that I can see these tendencies in myself. And I like to think that I am thoughtful and am trying to get multiple sources of good information and how easy it is for anyone to fall prey of I'm using air quotes here, fake news.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of fake news in the world, and it comes in various formats. And it's okay for all of us to occasionally fall for something that isn't real or isn't, you know, checkable in the same ways. But it's worth noting the ways that so many people profit from it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then when you go back to people like Alex Jones, who I do think is one of the worst, especially because he was claiming that Sandy Hook did not take place, was actors. Having him and people like that being able to thrive in the Trump era is particularly upsetting.
Yeah, it is. I think Alex Jones is genuinely surprised that so many people are upset with him about Sandy Hook, because he's made that claim about so many things, you know, starting with the Oklahoma City bombings, which is when he really started to get famous.
Right.
It's
Boston Marathon.
Yeah, the Boston Marathon. It's also worth noting that a lot of the people who have made the Sandy Hook families particularly miserable are not as famous as Alex Jones. He is one of the worst just in terms of his reach. But, you know, there's another guy whose name I'm not going to use who has been locked in sort of endless litigation with one of the Sandy Hook families, and is like, besides being a Holocaust denier, is somebody who, you know, consistently demands that the Sandy Hook families exhume their children's bodies. You know, like, these are people who, even if they're not getting a big platform, even if they're not getting a ton of media attention, are still capable of like wreaking total havoc on people's lives.
Right.
Yeah.
And there are different ways, I guess, for any conspiracy theorist to wreak havoc, but certainly we're seeing measles outbreaks and medical things that used to not exist.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting. The anti-vaccine folks I was just with obviously told me that the measles vaccine is causing measles, that measles is also not a serious disease, that measles is spread by people who are vaccinated. It's just sort of like the bizarro world, but it is very, very interesting to me to see how they are responding to that, because that is undeniable. That is one of the ways that conspiracy theories are remaking the world.
Yes.
Is bringing back preventable diseases.
Let's move to a more fun topic of conspiracy theories, which is UFOs.
Yeah, it is more fun.
It's way more
until fun. It's not, but we'll get there.
Oh, gosh. So there have been recent reports that the Navy has been acknowledging that they have been seeing UFOs.
The Navy has made it easier for pilots to report when they see UFOs, because since at least 2004, Navy pilots have been pretty consistently reporting some of the same things. And several Navy pilots have come forward most recently to the New York Times and said, like, hey, we really need a way to talk about this, because we're seeing these things and it's bothering us. You know, one of the more famous ones is this 2004 sighting of what looked like a gigantic Tic Tac, this white seamless craft with no visible source of propulsion. So the interesting thing about that is that these disclosures in the New York Times are driving a bunch of conspiracy theories themselves in the UFO community, which is basically, I'll make it really brief, but there's basically this belief that what's happening right now is that the government is slowly sort of dropping information through the New York Times and through mainstream media. What the UFO world is referring to as controlled disclosure, because disclosure is the idea that someday the government will kind of throw open the doors and tell us everything they know.
So it's a little like QAnon in that they're looking for little hidden meanings in communications.
It's very sort of rooted in an acknowledgement of the government's role historically in trying to kind of engineer mass movements from within. You know, a lot of people in the UFO world talk a lot about the ways that the FBI tried to plant disinformation and sow confusion and chaos and division among civil rights groups and sort of other related groups in the 60s and 70s. So basically they have this belief that anything that is running in the New York Times or another major media outlet is there for a reason. So it's really, really interesting to watch the way that they're greeting this news versus everybody else, who's just kind of like, wow, this is really exciting. Cool.
Yeah. X-Files reboot part 12 totally. Or whatever it is.
And what is so interesting to me that I feel like nobody's talking about is that Leslie Keene has been a reporter on several of these New York Times stories. Leslie Keene is very well known in the UFO world, and she has been connected to a company that is like sort of advocating for disclosure. Like she is a UFO enthusiast, and I don't say that with any disrespect. Right. She's a very well-known reporter in that world, but she's appeared on Coast to Coast, which is a sort of beloved late-night UFO radio show. So for me, seeing Leslie Keene in the New York Times is very interesting.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a narrative in many conspiracy theories, including deep state stuff, that Donald Trump is a pawn. And he either does know or doesn't know that there are forces controlling him.
Right.
But he is a conspiracy theorist himself.
Yes.
Of course, he was one of the most prominent birther people.
Right. He essentially was the person who drove birtherism into the mainstream. He suggested that Ted Cruz's dad was connected to the JFK assassination. He's tweeted that vaccines cause autism, though he hasn't done that as president, thank God. But yeah, he is a pretty enthusiastic promoter of conspiracy theories.
So that has to help.
Yeah, I think its effect is pretty pronounced. I always think about what will happen if he wakes up and starts tweeting his support for some conspiracy theory. You know, if he wakes up tomorrow and decides to say that Q is real and, you know, has more to share or something, it's going to create absolute pandemonium. So, yeah, there's not really any downplaying what a big deal it is to have somebody who uses conspiracy theories for personal and political gain in the White House.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And to go a little deeper into Q, the people who believe this theory believe that almost everything involves child prostitutes and sex rings.
Yeah, there's a lot of sex trafficking stuff in both QAnon and Pizzagate, which is sort of a related kind of earlier movement, you know, that has died down a little bit. And there's also a lot of like infighting between Pizzagate and QAnon folks in a way that I think is really interesting. But yeah, a lot of them will claim that they're, and some people in the UFO world too, and some people in white supremacist movements, a lot of people in a lot of places will claim that the government is rife with pedophiles who are ritually abusing children in secret.
I mean, and who doesn't want to stop that?
Yeah, exactly.
It'd be very bad if you wanted that to continue.
Exactly. I talk about it a little bit in the book, but it is an echo of the blood libel, which is, you know, an ancient, like literally medieval belief that Jews were meeting in secret to ritually abuse Christian children and then kill them and use their blood and matzah. And it's also like the most clear-cut justification for violence and extreme action that there could possibly be. Because if you believe that about your enemies, that they're hurting children, there's nothing you wouldn't do to stop it. And so I always think it's a really efficient rhetorical device if you're trying to justify just about anything.
Right.
Yeah.
And you get into this in the book too, that it's impossible to have a conversation with the conspiracy theorist because anything that you try to argue, they will throw back at you as you're being part of the thing they're trying to stop.
Well, especially if you're a journalist. I mean, I would say that we are obviously conspiracy theorists to some degree or another. We all are in the pool together. Just some of us are in deeper ends of the pool. But yeah, especially people who believe that the mainstream media is controlled by hidden forces.
Right.
It's very hard to have a conversation that doesn't end up there. And so it's sort of an interesting like interviewing challenge where I'm like, okay, how do I get you to talk to me in a way that isn't sort of focused on making accusations that are super wild and that I can't really respond to other than to be like, that's not true. And I know that it's not true, but I can't convince you that it's not true.
What are some techniques you've found that are
Sometimes I overshare. I'll say, you know, I'm a 32-year-old woman who lives with roommates and whose every move online for the last 15 years is trackable because I'm part of a generation where that happened.
Yeah.
Like, you would know if I worked for the CIA or
something. Right, right, right.
You know, but of course that's not convincing. I also, you know, I try some mixture of empathy and being like, I understand why you don't trust the government. I understand how you got there. But also being like, that is ridiculous. I don't tell people that they are ridiculous, but I tell them that the theory is ridiculous and that it is not believable to me. I try to be pretty straightforward about what I'm thinking and feeling, and that it doesn't obviously change anybody's mind, but it at least sort of drives a conversation. I rarely have people, you know, get up and storm away. That's not really a thing that I have happen very often because people know
right.
that most folks don't believe what they believe. They're right. they're accustomed to that. And so in a way, I think they appreciate me being kind of straightforward with them.
Do you want to talk a little bit about what you're reading? And
yeah,
what,
totally. Yeah. yeah.
Good. I mean, first, I guess we should say recommended reading for after you've all purchased and read
yeah.
Anna's book. But beyond that, what are some great...
I've been reading Say Nothing right now, which is obviously about the Troubles in Northern yeah. Ireland. It's sort of half history and half true crime. It's amazing. It's just amazingly done technically. Like, it's so dense. It's so complicated, but it works so well. It makes me wish that I had longer to read it at a time. Did you read that Ben Dolnick thing in the Times about binge reading, like recommending
yes,
binge reading?
Yes.
I thought it was so great.
It's a nice thing. It's I'm one of the few people who actually has the time because that's my job.
Right.
And it does make a difference in terms of what you take in and understand about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, and coherence, definitely. Yeah, yeah, I've really, really, really been loving it. The other thing that I'm reading right now, unfortunately, is Morrissey's autobiography.
Oh, right. Yes, we were talking about that.
Yeah, which is great timing for me. Obviously, people listening will probably know this, but Morrissey recently wore the pin of a very far-right British political party on Jimmy Fallon while he was performing and has always been pretty racist and pretty
yeah.
xenophobic,
yeah.
but has just become really
worse.
Brought it to a new like fever pitch. The book is very interesting, though. He's a very interesting writer. And if you want to find like an unreliable narrator,
yeah,
and
right,
like
Morrissey.
Consider, yeah, he's right up there. So I don't know. I'm gonna give it away when I'm done with it, but I'm glad that I'm reading it.
Okay.
yeah.
And what are you watching? Anything exciting?
What am I watching? I am just a huge not John Oliver nerd, and I watch mm-hmm. every episode of his show and think it's really, really great. And I'm always really happy when he does something that's not Trump related. There was an episode on psychics not that long ago
yep.
that is like,
yes,
you know, just I think it's really cool to do stuff that is completely outside.
Absolutely.
The Trump bubble.
And you, but you can see how it's related, but you don't actually have to explicitly say it.
Totally. The last one I watched was about death investigations and mm-hmm. coroners versus medical examiners. And it was so good. There were so many things that I didn't know. I would say that that's the only thing I watch on a super regular basis, but I really, really like it. And
so good.
I don't know. Everything else is like, I watch one episode of something and I'm like, that was great. And then never go back to
right,
it.
Right, right. How about online, are there any articles, especially, I mean, you mentioned Adrian Chen a
yeah.
bunch in your book.
Yeah, he's amazing. He's a really, really great reporter. I mean, I always, you know, this is such an obnoxious New Yorker thing to say, but I think the New Yorker's features are some of the best in the world.
Yes.
I mean, they're really just the masterclass in how to do it. There are a few like new sites on the Civil network that I've really been enjoying.
Oh,
Popula.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Hum Daily. I don't know if the Small Bow is part of it. I think it's called the Small Bow. It's a website about addiction recovery.
Oh.
That is run by AJ Delario, who
Great.
You know is a former
yeah.
Gawker person who's talked
yeah.
a lot about his own recovery pretty publicly. So, I mean, I'm not somebody to whom that applies, and I still think it's really, really interesting.
Right.
So yeah, I don't know. I feel like there are so many great places to read features now, which as somebody who writes features is like, you know, horrible because every single day I see something that I wish I'd written, but there are so many good ones.
Yeah.
I somehow discovered Instapaper like a million years after everyone
helpful.
Else did. It's incredible. It's
yes.
the greatest thing. It is like the number one game changer of my life that I finally get to save all the articles I want.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
And talk just a little bit about Jezebel. And
yeah. Right. So I'm a reporter at Geo Media, which used to be Gizmodo Media, which used to be Gawker Media. And for a long time, for the last couple of years, I was part of something called the Special Projects Desk, which got shut down by our new dads. And so now, technically, I'm a reporter for Jezebel again, which I was at before. So there has been a lot of upheaval. But through it all, I have gotten to do some cool stuff. And
yeah.
more to the point, a lot of my coworkers at Jezebel and elsewhere at Geo do really cool stuff. And we're about to do a series that I'm really looking forward to that is going to be very stupid and very funny that I think I can say is about Times Square because we just moved to Times Square.
Ah, excellent.
And so I'm excited for that just as like, you know, extremely fun, escapist, ridiculous first person stuff.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, Anna, thank you so much for coming in and being on the Maris Review.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Thank you for listening to the Maris Review, and check the show notes for the books we discussed on here today. And please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.